and a high in the lower 60s predicted. WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. From WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're keeping you connected on today's show, the Cannabis Consortium in the Catskills. Marijuana and hemp legalized in New York, and how can Sullivan County become a national and global leader in the industry? We'll speak to panel leader David C. Holland of Empire State Normal about the event later this afternoon. Also, a recap of last weekend's Women's March on the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge. Rosie Starr was there and got voices capturing the moment. Also, Sullivan 180 has a Basics of Resilience coming up training on the 21st. We'll check in with Megan Mullally-Gore. And also, we'll get more information about today's Indigenous Women's Voices Summit at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center.
Hi from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. A Texas law that bans abortion as early as 6 weeks into a pregnancy is back in effect, at least temporarily. A federal appeals court has reinstated the law and is giving the Justice Department until Tuesday to file a response. Ashley Lopez, a member station KUT in Austin, reports.
The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has temporarily stopped a lower court ruling that struck down Texas's abortion ban. That is, at least until early next week. Texas's law is the most restrictive abortion law in the country. Other states have tried to enact similar bans, but they have been stopped by the courts. The Texas law, though, was designed to evade a court from stepping in before the law goes into effect, which is why it has been in place for more than a month. Abortion providers say in that time they have had to turn away the majority of people seeking an abortion in the state. Abortion rights groups say the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling is deeply alarming because it reinstates an unconstitutional law. Anti-abortion groups say it is a victory. I'm Ashley Lopez in Austin.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is warning that he will not again help Democrats extend the government's borrowing authority. He laid out his stance in a letter to President Biden after reversing course this week and allowing a short-term extension to pass the Senate. The House is to vote on that measure on Tuesday. As wildfires become more frequent in western states due to climate change, flames may have killed hundreds of giant sequoia trees in Northern California. From member station KQED, Kevin Stark reports.
The KNP complex and other fires have burned rapidly through more than a dozen monarch sequoia groves in California's Sierra Nevada. Areas of these forests are overgrown after decades of fire suppression. Christy Brigham is with the National Park Service. She says the wildfires are burning incredibly hot.
We have direct reports of monarch sequoias torching where the canopy catches on fire. And that's just heartbreaking.
Giant sequoias need frequent fires to thrive so long as they burn at low severity and not very hot. The full impact of these wildfires won't be known for months. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Stark in San Francisco.
Ethiopian troops and their allies are reported to have intensified attacks against Tigrayan rebels with aerial bombardments in the Amhara region. Earlier this week, the prime minister promised to stand strong, as the BBC's Will Ross reports.
A spokesman for the Tigray People's Liberation Front said there had been a massive troop buildup and the group's positions had been attacked by warplanes, drones and artillery in the Amhara region. He said the TPLF forces would stand their ground until the siege was lifted. 11 months since the first bullets were fired, international calls for a ceasefire and negotiations are still being ignored. This week, the UN described the humanitarian situation on the ground as highly unpredictable and deteriorating by the day.
The BBC's Will Ross reporting. You're listening to NPR News. The U.S. delegation is in Doha this weekend holding talks with senior Taliban officials. It's the first such meeting since the U.S. military withdrawal in August. Officials say the meeting is focusing on the evacuation of foreign citizens and Afghans from the country and containing extremist groups. Yesterday, the Islamic State affiliate in Afghanistan carried out a suicide bombing that killed at least 46 Shiite Muslims. In Britain, consumers continue to be affected by shortages caused by a supply chain emergency. agency, an ongoing fuel crisis is complicating matters for consumers and industry. Vicky Barker reports from London.
Britain's steel, cement, ceramics, and chemicals industries are huge consumers of energy. Many pay for it years in advance, and those whose contracts are up for renewal now are being hit hard by a post-pandemic price surge. Gordon Foster runs a chain of play centers.
At the moment, energy is selling 8 times higher than it was when that contract was started.
A number of lawmakers from the governing Conservative Party have joined opposition Labour calls for government bailouts over a crisis which threatens to worsen Britain's ongoing supply chain crisis. New government figures show 1 in 6 adults has been unable to obtain at least one staple food product in the past 2 weeks. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
The first big snowstorm of the season moving into the Mountain West. The National Weather Service warning of a series of storms that could dump heavy snow in the Rocky Mountains and keep the potential for tornadoes and heavy rain in the forecast in central states through early next week. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. 6 months ago, New York State passed its landmark bill legalizing marijuana for adult use and creating a regulatory framework for the cannabis industry overall. What does that mean for us locally? Well, the Catskills Cannabis Consortium is meeting today at 4 at the Narrowsburg Union. It's a panel of industry experts talking about legalized marijuana and hemp industries, specifically in Sullivan County, and what are the advantages and benefits and some of the concerns. It's being led by David C. Holland, executive and legal director of the Empire State Normal and president of the NYC Cannabis Industry Association. We spoke recently.
So this has been something that I have been looking forward to putting on for a long time. And I've been a longtime cannabis activist for about 25 or so years, waiting for the day that, even though I'm not a consumer of cannabis, you know, waiting for the day that legalization would come. And here it happened this year. Just as the end of March approached, Governor Cuomo signed into law the MRTA, which is the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, which is one of the most comprehensive and progressive statutes in the country that has legalized adult use cannabis as well as industrial hemp and medical marijuana. And that's what I'm here to talk to people about, is explaining some what the law is, some of their concerns about it, and what it means to communities throughout Sullivan County, and what it could be as a great opportunity for industrial growth here.
We're talking about the potential for Sullivan County to be a national and global leader in industrial hemp and agricultural and manufacturing practices. Why do you think that is? Why is the county so primed for that?
Well, you know, so it is just so perfectly located, being only 100 plus miles from New York City. It has access by waterway. We have great highways. We have small regional airports that have access to larger airports. And you have tremendous amounts of land that are not only have been previously under the plow, but areas that could be grown. And industrial hemp particularly is a product that's used throughout the world by billions of people. And until 1936, we were the world leader in its production, as we have a long history of our relationship to hemp, including the colonists were required to grow it. And our Constitution was actually written on hemp paper. Yeah. So with the reemergence of hemp being now legalized by Congress in 2018, Sullivan County can use this plant for a variety of reasons, and particularly as you saw during COVID, where the supply chain broke down and you watched like plywood, you know, go, it quadrupled, if not more, in cost. That's a resource that it takes 90 years to grow a tree to full maturity. Then they usually get turned into pulp and so forth. You can grow an industrial hemp plant in 90 days. So the world relies on it, needs sustainable green resources, and industrial hemp is definitely one of them, and Sullivan County uniquely situated to not only grow and process that plant, but to export it through its airports and its highways, not only to New York City, but you have the international market in Canada and China and India. You're talking billions of people that are using those products daily that we could access in no time.
Well, and agriculture represents the second largest economic sector in Sullivan County, but we have seen the traditional agricultural parts of the county sort of decline. Do you think that this is definitely, the thing that will sort of springboard agriculture back to the forefront of the economic engine of the county?
I do, because let's just take something like cotton, which is a single resource agricultural product, which can be turned into, cloth and other millinery products, and certainly it's used with wood pulp into making paper. But a cannabis plant, there's only one plant. It's a cannabis plant. Hemp is just something that's described as now under the law is less than 0.3% of 1% of THC, which is the delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, which is what people refer to as marijuana, which gets them high. Hemp is anything below that threshold of 0.3%, so just so people understand it. But it can be made into a variety of medical products because the cannabinoids are being researched, and there's been ongoing research taking place at SUNY Sullivan, and there are other private groups here that are looking at that for the medical and uses of the cannabinoids. You can turn it into paper. You can turn it into wood planking, and you can turn it into biodiesel. So one plant can really serve multiple masters, if you will, in a way that no other single-use product like corn or cotton can with as great proficiency and worldwide access to worldwide markets.
And at the consortium later today, you'll be talking about those things and as well as the framework for the entire Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. That includes a lot. Can you kind of give us an overview of what that looks like and how folks can benefit?
Absolutely. So the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, or the MRTA, that was passed in March is, when I said comprehensive, it brings three things together under one roof. So the MRTA created the Office of Cannabis Management and the Cannabis Control Board, and former state senator Jen Metzger is one of the members of the Cannabis Control Board that's going to oversee the Office of Cannabis Management. And under that, that's going to be a subset of the State Liquor Authority, but it will be totally independent of the Liquor Authority. It is going to oversee the industrial hemp programs in New York State. It will oversee the medical marijuana program in New York State, and it will also so oversee the adult use markets and that we're going to see emerging as a result of legalization in New York State. So it's a very big thing. And speaking to the industrial hemp side and all the applications that it may have for Sullivan County. So one of my speakers will be John Gilstrap, and he is a former industrial hemp farmer who was part of Hudson Hemp in Hudson, New York, which was very successful. And he is formerly with the New York State Economic Development Council. And he is somebody that will talk not only about industrial hemp, but what different agricultural avenues might be there for funding and programming in New York State under the hemp program. And I'm also bringing in a friend, Kristen Jordan from Park Jordan, which is a real estate firm that will be talking about different aspects of, lending, leasing, and how farmers that have present lands and those people that might want to become sharecroppers or landowners in the industrial hemp and cannabis space, the marijuana space, can get involved as well. And I'll be speaking to a number of issues about the MRTA and what is called the opt-out, where towns are considering whether to allow they're going to allow retail sales and consumption lounges of adult-use cannabis, which some people call recreational. And that's what we're going to be covering. And it's a two-hour program, but I promise you it will take not 2 hours for us to present our side, but with all the questions that I've been getting from around the community, which have been just great, insightful questions, I'm sure it's going to be a really robust program that everybody will be excited to attend like I am.
Now, there are some mixed feelings about the legalization of marijuana and marijuana businesses in particular towns or villages, and some of those towns and villages in our area have already opted out. Do you feel like maybe there's not enough education about what the potential is, or do you feel like that's just sort of the status quo when it comes to this kind of business in someone's backyard?
Well, so, and I am aware of what's going on, and I've spoken to, at the county and town levels, to many of the zoning and planning people that had questions about this. And what the opt-out is, just so people understand it, it will prevent a town from having either a retail location like a storefront or a consumption site, but it would not be allowed in any way to alter the industry in terms of cultivation or processing or people consuming or having it delivered in from other towns. That's outside the purview. But so much of the opt-out that I'm hearing questions about are based on people that were sort of bought into the propaganda of prohibition that really have not been exposed to what the truths are, or things like the MRTA that says in its preamble that the enforcement of the marijuana laws were not based on science, but they were so disproportionately impactful on people of color and the Latinx community that they're trying to do reformative justice through this whole legalization act. And one of the things I'll do is take a few minutes to tell people the history of prohibition in America, because it is astonishing. And it will, when you come to the end of it and you hear the people that helped develop prohibition and the federal policies and the state policies, you're going to hear them admit that it was all about race and it had nothing to do with science. And I'm going to cite two different scientific studies that have come out, including the director, Ms. Calico, of the National Institute of Drug Abuse, who has said that there are things like teen use. Legalization has done nothing to increase teen use. And we can talk about traffic safety issues. And one of the people that I videotaped, because he can't make it there himself, is Chief Joseph Sinagra of the Socrates Police Force. And he's also the liaison from the New York State Association of Police Chiefs, their Traffic Safety and Public Health Division. And he talks about what legalization means from a law enforcement perspective and how it can be addressed without going back into the xenophobic fears that drove prohibition to begin with. And it's a great interview with him talking about it. And I am empathetic to towns and municipalities that may not want retail sales in their jurisdictions. And that's fine. That's a matter of choice, and that's a matter of citizenry choice. But let's make sure we're doing it based on fact and not on fear. And then if they choose to opt out, I just explained how that the MRTA is one of the very few things that allows a voter referendum to undo a legislative decision. So if a town opts out, there is a way for voters to opt it back in. And I talk about that as well.
Let me take a second to reintroduce you. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with David Holland, the executive and legal director of Empire State Normal. He is the panel leader at the Catskill Cannabis Consortium, which is happening later today at 4 at the Narrowsburg Union, with discussion with industry experts about the legalized marijuana and hemp industries in Sullivan County. David, one of the topics that you also say you're going to include is about social equity and licensing priority. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So social equity is one of the fundamental principles that the MRTA was designed to address. And there, as I said before, you know, as part of the history of prohibition is really racist at the heart of it. And so just for example, when I say that, in the years 2002 to 2018, there were nearly 1 million arrests in New York State for cannabis-related offenses. 875,000 of those arrests, or 87.5%, were people of disproportion for the alleged offense that was committed. And the MRTA is set out designed to go and rectify that disproportionality, because the communities and the families that were ripped apart, the kids that were taken away, the businesses that were devastated by that over-prosecution and over-persecution is at the heart of what the MRTA wants to address. So social equity is trying to help those people that had been previously what they call, you know, prisoners of the drug war, to help them find access to stay in the markets that have been there, that they were involved in. And they, so it's training programs and low to no cost interest loans that can help them get set up in businesses. And those funds are going to come out of the what's the tax revenues that's expected to be generated under the legalization program. And that works out that it's a 13% tax rate with 9% going to the state. But check this out. 3% goes to the local town or village and 1% goes to the county. And to give you an idea of scale, in California, they just reported $2.8 billion in tax revenue in the last 3 years. And that is considered to be one-fifth of what the real market is, because they still have a slow transition to the legacy market due to their tax rate. But just take $2.8 billion and imagine what 3% of those sales is to a local municipality like Tustin or Highland or Rockland. Think what you could do to address not only what have been impactful in terms of the prior prohibition campaigns in rebuilding those communities, but 40% of the money that goes to state is designed to go into community reinvestment. 40% goes into the social equity fund, and 20% goes to law enforcement and better training and policing, which will address issues that people have of concern, like people operating vehicles while under the influence of cannabis, because there has not been an effective way to ever determine that. And there now are a number of academic and other research programs being developed to come up with a more accurate thing to determine whether somebody is actually under the influence of cannabis or if they had used it within the last 30 days, which is all their urine or blood test will tell you. So that's what's going on. So it's a very progressive bill, and it means a tremendous amount, not only to the people that have an interest in cannabis, but the communities that will be rebuilt by it. It's a tremendous amount of revenue. So before communities opt out, think of what that is. And when I mentioned California, which the $2.8 billion is considered to be only one-fifth of the overall market, imagine what 3% of $13 billion would mean to Sullivan County communities. That's what ought to be considered before towns opt out.
Have there been revenue projections for New York State and what that might look like?
Absolutely. So far in the first year, they're expecting just $20 million. But in the second years and moving forward to year five, they're expecting hundreds of millions in tax revenue. And just so people appreciate it, New York is the world's largest single marketplace. And the tax revenue, by legalizing it, you create revenue that will allow these communities to definitely rebuild. But think of all the public infrastructure that could be rebuilt from it. And think of all the jobs. When you think about this, think not about, well, whether people should be able to sell and consume marijuana in a storefront or a social consumption site. Think of, for every single shop that needs to be built, you need an electrician, you need a glazier to do windows, you need an HVAC person, and think of all the trades that people could be trained in and carry those skills on in their life to whole other operations beyond just the cannabis industry. So the pebble in the pond, the ripple effect of bring legalization and retail sales to a community are tremendous because of the jobs and the trades and all the ancillary businesses that will be built around that. So there is reason to look beyond people's moral or other reasons to say I'm in favor of it or not, to look at what it will really mean on a progressive level for a whole community, a county, and a state. And that's what we're going to be speaking about.
You mentioned law enforcement. That's also another topic, law enforcement concerns. They're unique concerns in this age of legalization. What are some of those unique concerns, and how is law enforcement planning to deal with that?
Well, there's absolutely legitimate concern about people operating vehicles while under the influence of cannabis. The problem has been there's been no adequate scientific way to determine whether somebody is under the influence or impaired by cannabis, because so far the tests that are administered, generally blood and urine tests, only measure the metabolite, which means that all it can do is tell you whether somebody has consumed within the last 30 days or not. It has nothing to do with whether they were operating a vehicle while they were actually high behind the wheel. So Chief Sinagra, who's one of the people that will be on a video interview that I've done, talks about some of those concerns and how policing might be changed and how community dialogue with not only the communities that are considering the opt-out provisions and so forth, but with organizations like mine, which is not just Normal. I also am the co-founder of the New York City Cannabis Industry Association, as well as the sister organization, the Hudson Valley Cannabis Industry Association. We are directly engaging with law enforcement on the state and national levels, trying to hear their concerns and discuss community concerns and those people that want to get into the industry to figure out how we can best alleviate those concerns and make sure we're addressing public health and safety issues so that we don't have people operating while stoned. And the traffic and safety reports that come out actually indicate that there is not a high correlation between cannabis use and car accidents, and quite the opposite is actually suggested. So So these are things that need to be discussed and considered at the community level when talking about how to deal with the adult use and now the legalized sales of cannabis in New York State.
The New York State Cannabis Control Board met for the first time this week. They did some business, confirming some staffers, but they also approved the whole flower as a medical cannabis product. They waived a $50 patient and caregiver registration fee for medical marijuana and authorized groups to receive a 60-day supply up from 30 days. But they didn't pass any regulations. And what I understand, the towns need to decide by December 31st of this year whether they're going to participate or opt out, or otherwise they'll be automatically opted in. Do you think that the Cannabis Control Board is going to be able to get these regulations and rules passed quickly?
I think that they will do their best. It's a big undertaking because there are lots of impacted areas, like let's just take employment law, public safety, these types of issues. And, you know, one of the important ones is called home grow, where people are going to actually be able to grow six plants of their own within their home. They can have three what are called flowering plants are mature and ready to harvest, and three that are on their way to getting there. And you can have a total of 12 in a house, regardless of the number of people, if there are two or more. So these are big issues, because what impact does that have on the power grid, and what does that have on public safety? Those are rules and regulations that will take some time to develop, but it really doesn't affect the opt-out. What the opt-out is every town and municipality right now is presumed to be in favor of having retail sales and consumption sites in their borders. The opt-out is they can pass a local ordinance to opt out of the program, and they have to do that by December 31st of this year. Otherwise, they're automatically enrolled and they will not be able to opt out later. And so all that is in the opt-out is deciding whether a town wants to have storefronts for retail sales and consumption lounges. It can't and they cannot pass any regulation that impacts on any other aspect of the industry. So there is a provision, as I said earlier, for voters to actually say, despite the legislature opting out by majority vote, we want to put it back in and rejoin the program to have retail and consumption sites within our community. And that's something we talk about there too. But the regulations and the rules, that's what the New York City Cannabis Industry Association and Hudson Valley Cannabis Industry Association are so much about, is trying to ensure that all the players, that from the underground to the above ground to the moral high ground, all those people that have a voice and have an opinion about how the legalized cannabis sales should go and the industry should be shaped, that's the conversation that we've committed ourselves to, and that's what we're trying to bring to the legislators to help make their job easier so that all ideas and viewpoints are represented in their considerations.
And is that the main takeaway you want folks to get from this consortium? Well, what's the one takeaway you want folks to get from this?
Absolutely. This is a matter of choice for each and every individual. Our job is just to make sure that people are educated so they know what the facts are, not what the fear-mongering has been. And then they can make choices for themselves about what to do in terms of opting out, or whether they want to enter into the industry, whether they want to make land available to others that want to get into the industry. And we'll talk about that. And the idea is the cannabis industry, like it or not, is here and is going to grow. And you ought to make well-educated choices for yourself and your community about how that's going to implement and roll out.
We've been talking to David Holland, the executive and legal director of Empire State Normal, also the president of the New York City Cannabis Industry Association. He is leading a panel of experts about the legalized marijuana and hemp industries in Sullivan County at the Catskills Cannabis Consortium later today, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Narrowsburg Union. It's free and open to the public. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you so much for this opportunity. And those that can't make it, there is an online registration where you can watch it live via Zoom.
More information at narrowsburgunion.com. David, thank you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
We'll take a short break. And when we come back, voices of protest. We will be at the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge, or we were at the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge last weekend during the Women's March. We'll have those voices next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Sunday Stage here on Radio Catskill features live performances from the third annual Porch Fest in Calicoon, New York. I'm Kathy Geary, and I heard all kinds of music from blues and folk to rock and swing, and I had a lot of good conversations, and I wanted to share it with you. Porch Fest 2021 on Sunday Stage.
Sunday night at 7.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. You rely on us, and we rely on you. Support Radio Catskill at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As you may have heard in this morning's NPR News headlines, most abortions in Texas are banned again after a court ruling Friday. A federal appeals court panel temporarily reinstated the law that bans most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy while it considers a district judge's ruling. The fifth annual Women's March last Saturday, October 2nd, drew tens of thousands of demonstrators across the U.S. to protest that Texas law, including here in our community. WJFF's Rosie Starr went out to the march at the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge and spoke to some of those marching.
Well, it looks like we're standing in solidarity here in Narrowsburg for the rights of women's reproductive health. Would you like to tell me your name and give me an idea what your message is?
Sure. My name is Mitra. I live in Coshecton, and we have, many of us have been part of a generation that maybe has taken women's rights for granted, but now the attack on women's rights is so coordinated and so sophisticated, we really have to stand up and fight back.
I see you're holding a sign, and others are holding the same sign. What does it say?
Together we fight for all. And it's a Planned Parenthood sign. I see some others that say, I stand with Planned Parenthood. I've seen those around, actually, in our community. So, yeah, that's what we're here for.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
I'm with Radio Catskill. Would you like to tell me your name and whatever message you'd like to share about today?
Hi, I'm Alice Hirsch. And my message is that I'm just really trying to support keeping us moving forward and not backwards in light of everything that's going on in Texas and that's about to happen now with this case in Mississippi. And it's, you know, as a woman, 58-year-old woman, it's really upsetting to see this happen, that my 19-year-old daughter now is not going to have the same rights I've had. So just out here to lend my voice to support keeping progress moving forward and not backwards for women.
My name is Caroline Lehman, and my message is we are here for reproductive control and privacy of our own rights. Go women.
Thank you.
Let's welcome Michelle Minerwal.
So today across our nation, people have gathered to rally for abortion justice. And here we are in Narrowsburg. Woo, 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 woo. We must continue to stand together, walk together, and fight together for abortion justice. Abortion must be affordable and accessible to all. And can we please stop shaming people who get an abortion? We do not know a person's reason. We don't know their story, and we don't need to. It's not our story. Instead, let's listen to their story if they want to speak it. Let's support them. Let's lift them up. This rally is not just about keeping abortion legal. It's about keeping it legal while also making it accessible, affordable, and stigma-free for all. We need to keep the light on this issue, and we need to keep this conversation going. An easy way to remember it are four A's: abortion, accessibility, affordability, and acceptance for all. Thank you.
My name is Rosie. I'm a volunteer with Radio Catskill. Would you like to tell me your name and what your message is for today?
Priscilla Bassett, and I am a spokesperson for senior women. and men. And for many, many years, I have supported the right of women to choose. And I think that's what this is all about. And here I am with my 93-year-old body out here standing strong. Thank you.
I'm standing in front of a young woman now. She has a baby in her arms and one on the way. So we'll ask her name.
Hi, my name is Ray Levine Spielberg.
Do you have a message about today?
Yes, I support wholeheartedly a woman's right to plan her births and plan her life.
And we're hoping for those reproductive rights to stand strong during the life of your young child that you hold in your arms. She's a girl.
I support my daughter's right, human rights.
I think she'd like to have a message, too.
And she wants to say something, too.
Women's rights now.
Hello, Narrowsburg and surrounding communities. I'm Barb Schmidt, a community volunteer with Planned Parenthood of Greater New York, your local Planned Parenthood, and I'm very grateful to be here today with you all. Thank you all for being here and joining the call to stand in solidarity with the people of Texas. SB 8, enacted on September 1st, outlaws abortion care after 6 weeks of pregnancy, before many people even are aware of being pregnant, even in the cases of fetal diagnoses like our last speaker just spoke about, rape and incest. SB 8 deputizes private citizens to file lawsuits against anyone who aids or abets an abortion, and further offers a $10,000 bounty to these bounty hunters. We know that it is the most marginalized people of Texas, those who already face the greatest barriers in assessing health care, who will suffer disproportionately. We say hell no!
Hell no!
Today we join sister marches across our country as we shout loud and clear an angry message to the Texas legislature and to the rest of the country, to the world, and most especially to our Supreme Court, that we will not accept Texas' unconstitutional abortion ban.
Never again!
Thank you. Or any other state abortion ban that may come after. We do not accept the Supreme Court inaction to uphold the constitutional right of the people of Texas to access abortion care, and that we are the majority.
Would you like to tell me your name and your message?
My name is Sue, and my message is that women's right to choose does not belong in the government's hands.
My name is Sheila, and my message is when you have a medical problem, it should be between the woman, her partner, and a physician. When you're sick, you don't call your congressman. Politics has nothing to do with this. Absolutely nothing.
Hi, I'm Joan. I'm 65. I'm still waiting for the Equal Rights Amendment. Yeah. It's been 50 years. Come on, let's go.
Tell me your name.
I'm Sydney. I just don't think that the government should be allowed to tell women what to do with their bodies.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Thank you, guys, for coming out today. I know it's very cliche to say, but together we make a difference. Together we are stronger. It's a cliche for a reason. So thank you, guys, first and foremost, for coming out on a Saturday. I know it's nice, but still, it's your Saturday. So thank you. By way of introduction, yes, my name is Cambry Cruz, and I am a candidate for town council in Coshecton. Come for me this November. But I am from Texas. And just a little intro about my childhood. I will spare you all the traumatic details of my childhood, but I did grow up quite poor. My family is all deaf. And at one point, we lived in a one-room tin shed without running water, electricity, or plumbing. Eventually, we got a trailer. The trailer was repossessed. We found ourselves homeless and living back in a one-room tin shed. And, yeah, some of the rich kids at school were like, trailer trash. I'm like, you wish.
wish. No trailer. And I escaped to New York. Thank God. Yeah, but, you know, getting through hard work and dedication and all this focus and everything, you know, I'm standing here before you today. But I had to get out because I did not feel it was possible for these things to happen for me while I was still in Texas. Because every interaction that I ever had with any institution in Texas, be it from public schools to prisons, which honestly are very similar, they did not care about the children. So spare me this sanctimonious horseshit that this is about the children. This is not about the unborn, no. This is a race and class warfare. Rich people, rich white people, they're going to get their abortions. This is not about the children. They will find a way. No, this is about the patriarchy of that good old boy network that I know all too well in Texas, wanting to preserve the power that they see slipping away, and they see it slipping away because of us, right here and right now.
Hi, would you like to tell me your name and your message?
I'm Eileen Ahern, and this is something that has to continue going. We have people from their 90s to their single digits here, and that's the way it's always been. We're building on those who came before us and honoring them, and hopefully we'll someday be honored by those who no longer have to think about this issue.
Thank you.
My name is Barbara Gogan. I live up in Equinox. And I believe that it's a woman's right to choose what to do with our own body. You know, that's, I don't want anyone telling me what I can or cannot do. And I feel like it's a fundamental freedom that we all should respect.
My name is Miriam, and I'm very happy to see the turnout for such a great cause. And I hope that this is a step forward in the right direction.
I believe that every woman, whether American-born or immigrant or on the other side of the planet, deserves respect with their choices, especially to do with their bodies. It is their bodies. It is our bodies. Yeah. I had 4 children as a single mom because I chose to do that. It was my choice. I worked very hard to raise my family by myself. That was my choice. I had that right. Now, I shudder to think we're going backwards, that all the good things that I saw move forward for women, we now see going backwards. We're being told very proactively that we're less than, and we are not going to listen to that, and we're just not going to do it. So, really what I want to say is that today I stand with you here, I march with you here, but beyond today, we have to work together. We have to weave a safety net for women. We have to help them with whatever choice they're making. We can't just stand and march and walk away. We have to help.
Le digo hoy a ustedes todos que yo estoy aquí parada con ustedes y marcho con ustedes. Pero mañana, después de hoy, tenemos que trabajar a tejer una redecilla de protección y seguridad para todas las mujeres, no importa su decisión. Thank you.
As the organizer of this, just tell us your name and tell us what your feelings are about today's turnout and sentiments.
My name is Jessie Spizzato, and I organized this march. I actually had the help of Beverly Sterner as well, who many people know, and she's been, you know, a longtime activist doing things on the Narrowsburg Bridge for a long time. And it's just been so amazing. I think when I first started doing this, I was like, if 5 people come, it will be great, you know? So I think I'm really bad at, like, sort of figuring out numbers, but I'd say there's at least 40, 50, 60 people here, maybe even more. So I'm really, really happy that people had a place to go. First of all, I feel like a lot of people were like, yeah, we were looking for something in Sullivan County and couldn't find anything and then, you know, stumbled on this. So I'm so glad that I was able to have a part in providing that. And it's just been really awesome to see the turnout, and I'm so glad that we're all like fighting for this really important right together, and not just reproductive rights, but you know, abortion access for everyone forever. So super important, and I'm glad to be here with all these people fighting for this.
What do we want?
Abortion justice.
What do we want? Louder.
Abortion justice.
When do we want it?
WJFF's Rosie Starr at the Narrowsburg Darbytown Bridge, capturing voices of the Women's March in Narrowsburg. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear about the Women's Voices, Indigenous Women's Voices Summit at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. This is Radio Chatskill.
Donna Fellenberg here, and on Catskill Character this week, my guest, Todd Stevens, talks about growing up gay in conservative Sandusky, Ohio, and his new film, Swan Song, filmed in Sandusky, Ohio. Todd is also a proud resident of the Catskills and helped turn an abandoned church into his dream home. Join us Saturday at 11:30 on WJFF.
Join me, Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg, for our next Let's Talk Vets. We'll learn about Sage Vets' expansion of advocacy and services for LGBTQ plus vets to Western New York. We'll learn how the VA Hudson Valley Healthcare System is working hard to provide this community with the unique support they need, and how New York State's Restoration of Honor Act is chipping away at the institutional biases of the U.S. military establishment. That's Wednesday, 7 p.m., Let's Talk Vets.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. The second annual Indigenous Women's Voices Summit is underway at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. The goal of the summit is to celebrate, ignite, and connect First Peoples from Canada to Mexico in a vision for transformative social change that puts the principles of diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice into creative action. Later today at 4, live music with the Akwesasne Women Singers and singer Jennifer Kreisberg. Here she is, in her own words, telling us about the performance.
I will be singing along with the Akwesasne Women Singers. We're all old friends and have been performing together and separately for many, many years. And I will be giving more of a traditional-based concert. It'll be a lot of fun and completely within the spirit of the mandate or the vision of the conference. And I'm really looking forward to it. The two separate concerts and the live panel will be from 4 to 6. And I will be on, I think, more towards the end. The Akwesasne Women Singers sing traditional-based songs, Iroquois social songs, from upstate New York, where they're from, in the Akwesasne community. And they're led by Teresa Bear Fox. And so they usually use horn rattles and a water drum sometimes. And it's, I don't want to use the word chant because that's not what we call it, but there's some of it's in English, some of it's with vocables, and then I do all kinds of traditional and contemporary style Southeastern Indigenous-based music. None of us are really allowed to sing our traditional songs, like ceremonial songs, out in public, so we write songs more of in the vein that can be sung socially and for everybody. It's for everybody's consumption. And my songs, some of them are in English, some of them use vocables, some of them are, I use hand drum, rattles, stuff like that. Song-wise, the women singers, I'm more of a contemporary artist than they are, but song-wise, it's just there's many groups of Iroquois women singers from the different communities, and they come together a couple times a year, well, pre-COVID, at all these things, which are you know, more for fun and to keep these singing traditions alive. And as for me, I started singing professionally when I was 17 with a group with my cousin and another woman. And we sang a cappella songs, but they were still based on the songs of our traditional communities. I want them to walk away with, you know, good things can still happen, that the way forward is everyone together collectively, and just a little joy, music, art, supporting your local artists, reaching out to people from communities you may not have normally associated with. That's the way forward now. That's the world we're in now. And those are old school teachings that still ring true.
That is Jennifer Kreisberg, who will be performing today at the Indigenous Women's Voices Summit at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center at 4. More information at HurleyvilleArtsCenter.org. And we meant to bring you a segment from Sullivan 180, but we will bring that to you during the local edition this week at 6:30. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. As we leave you, we'll leave you with the Akwesasce Women Singers song, Respect, the Women's Power Song. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. On air, online, on your smartphone, and on your smart speaker.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Marketplace on Main Street, home to Woolworth Yarn, the Calicoon Pantry, Early Bird Cookery, the Herbal Scoop, Channery Hill Farm, Vintage Maroc, and Lit Home and Book. From the Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you.
Toronto is Canada's most cosmopolitan city. It's home to a thriving African music community. From Sudanese hip-hop to classic Congolese rumba to Afrobeats and spectacular Pan-African collaborations. A vibrant and varied musical world. Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me for Toronto's African Scene. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRX.
Saturday night at 9 on Radio Catskill.
Join industry experts at the Catskill Cannabis Consortium, Saturday, October 9th, 4 to 6 p.m. Topics include the potential of Sullivan County to be a national and global leader in industrial hemp, social equity and licensing priority, and unique law enforcement concerns in the age of legalization. The Catskill Cannabis Consortium, open to the public at the Narrowsburg Union, Saturday, October 9th, 4 to 6 p.m. More information at narrowsburgunion.com. Paid for by the Narrowsburg Union.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill.
your NPR station for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Liam Mayo from the River Reporter. Wayne Memorial announced that, on December 31, 2021, longtime CEO David Hoff will step down, handing the reins to James Pettinato. Pettinato is currently the Director of Patient Care Services and was offered the position after a national executive search. As the Director of Patient Care Services, Pettinato currently heads up all departments that provide direct patient care, including the ICU, the New Beginnings Birthing Suites, and inpatient units. Pettinato said, quote, "It is a privilege to serve Wayne Memorial and even more of a privilege to be trusted to take the helm," unquote. The borough of Honesdale is considering changing up its tax policies, implementing an earned income tax on the paychecks and other earnings of residents and non-residents working within the borough, and lowering real estate taxes on property within Honesdale. Proponents of the change say that it would shift the burden of taxation from senior citizens to working people, while bringing the borough a temporary windfall which it could use to invest in stormwater management. Members of the Honesdale community are largely opposed, saying that Honesdale's current lack of an earned income tax is an economic strength rather than a weakness. And Governor Tom Wolf announced that, as of October 1, the number of people incarcerated in state correctional facilities is 36,743, the lowest total since 2001. On the local level, this reduction in prison populations is reflected in the Wayne County Commissioner's decision to examine merging its correctional operations with those of Pike County. This news roundup is produced in partnership with The River Reporter. I'm Liam Mayo.
And I'm Tim Bruno. You're listening to Radio Catskill. It's 10:56, and we're keeping you connected. In the community, the Mamakating Library presents Repair Cafe, an outdoor concert today until 3. Volunteer repair experts will be available outdoors behind the library to make repairs to broken items. There will also be a concert by Miss Maybell and the jazz artists performing ragtime and blues tunes. More information at mamakatinglibrary.org. Also, the Water Discovery Center is continuing its children's art and poetry focused on Catskills water at the Discovery Center in Arkville. That's today through from 12 to 3. More information at waterdiscoverycenter.org. The Roxbury Arts Group is presenting the Tremper Skills Boys on Saturday at 2 at the Veterans Memorial Park in Stamford. They perform Catskill tunes, original songs, plus Irish and Scottish melodies. More information at roxburyartsgroup.org. And the Kindred Spirits Arts Program has versatile marimba. That's today at 3:30 at the Pool Pavilion at Gray Towers in Milford. More information at kindredspirits.org. More information about these and other weekend events and other community events throughout the area at our community calendar. You can find it on our website, wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with our local public affairs show, The Local Edition.
Total reported confirmed cases of COVID-19 is lower than it was in the previous week.
Weeknights at 6:30.
Right now, only 16% of the teacher population is Hispanic, Latino, African American.
Join us for community news and conversations right after All Things Considered.
And yes, I am a kind of a wacky professor.
The Local Edition, weeknights at 6:30.
The forecast for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, mostly cloudy today with highs in the lower 60s. Cloudy tonight with a 40% chance of rain and then some showers after midnight. Lows in the lower 50s. Cloudy with a 50% chance of showers tomorrow, highs in the lower 60s. And on Monday, mostly cloudy with highs in the upper 60s. Remember to follow us on social media at WJFF Radio on Facebook and Instagram and on Twitter at Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, located in Harris and Calicoon, a member of the Garnet Health System, garnethealth.org. The River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, riverreporter.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR News. Everybody takes their coffee
a little bit differently. And of course, for some of us, it's tea. That's why you listen to NPR, because there are all sorts of people in the world and you hear those many voices. You can learn from people you agree with and disagree with. The news is personal. It's about you and your community. Hear every voice on NPR.
Weekday mornings at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.